Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
Oh, I told you I'd introduce you to our esteemed business panel. They're both here. Nora Casey, broadcaster and businesswoman, and Declan Ralph of the PWG Group, represent the Spar, Mace and XL brands. Good morning to you both.
Morning.
Morning.
Now, I'm sorry to start on tariffs, but we have to start somewhere. Declan, EU seeking clarity on the US trade deal details as the tariffs are pushed back another week. A lot happening here, and we've got to keep up with it all.
Yeah, really a lot happening. Lots of numbers, lots of percentages, lots of detail.
And lots of unknowns.
Lots of uncertainty.
Yeah.
And lots of unknowns, you say. Yeah. The latest is that Donald Trump has extended his self-imposed deadline to August the 7th now. So he's given us a little bit more time, the EU, that is, to get the negotiations finished. The deal, the top line deal, was the 15% tariff, which we know about now. But there's a lot of different invested interests, I suppose, and different industries looking for clarification around some of those. So the pharma industry, the drinks industry, all looking for zero for zero or something of that nature, Bobby.
Which they thought they were getting.
Yeah.
Interesting as well, Nora, we thought we had, lots said we had a bad deal at 15%. How do the Canadians at 35% or the Swiss at 35%?
Yeah, Swiss.
How do they feel?
To him, you know, in between playing golf in Scotland, he managed to, you know, nudge geopolitical turmoil even further. And then we have this odd thing that plays out in Ireland. Like Simon Harris was out saying, well, sure, it wasn't a bad deal now. You know, 15%, it could have been 30% and would have cost us 90 billion. And then Danny McCoy from IBEX coming out saying, well, it's going to reduce jobs, and the Department of Finance said it's going to reduce jobs, it's going to slow the economy. So it's a really difficult message. As I always say, the devil is in the detail. And we now have, I'd say, longer than a week, although he said August 7th, but they even have to, you know, they have to do this section 232 on
the
farm
analysis of the particular industries.
So the farm industry is huge in its own right, and that's going to take them 2 weeks.
But as I understand it, Nora, The cap on pharma is likely to be 15%. Is that true? That it won't be any worse?
It looks
won't
like,
be any worse than that.
Yeah, it looks like from all the various reports in the various papers, Bobby, it does look like that's the case, that 50% is the maximum. It can
and what about the EU, or sorry, the Great Britain, incorporating their existing tariffs, unlike the EUK's 10%? So what are they saying to us there?
There's different industries have different tariffs in the UK from my knowledge of it, Bobby, where like so the steel industry and so on, they have a different. So it's not a flat 10%, whereas the EU one is a flat 15%.
Okay.
So it's more evenly distributed across the industries and across the various parts of trade.
And during this, sorry, Bobby, during this period of, you know, just looking at the detail and everything, you know, France, of course, is straight out of the traps looking for deals on wine and I think digital services. And Ireland, of course, will be fighting its corner on spirits and whiskey. So there's still a lot. I think there's still a lot to play for in that, you know. But I guess at least we got a decision, you know, on the eve of the 1st of August, and we do have a stay of execution on it.
Yeah. And you know, I suppose there's some comfort in knowing that we know maybe 80% of what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And we've got to still work out some, but, you know, there are knowns there that do give comfort.
I had a teacher in school and she used to say, do you want to do that with a slap or without a slap? So that's what I think we were up against.
There's a few more slaps to come, I think.
Let's move on to Cliff Taylor's analysis. In today's Irish Times, Ireland will adjust to the US tariffs, but big issues await, Nora.
Yeah, Cliff Taylor's very funny. And of course, he says he's got enough grey hairs to remember the first or the last round of intensive negotiations, which were in Uruguay. And they concluded in around 1994, when I was just a child, really, now, Bobby. The high point, he says, although they didn't know it at the time, of the post-war drive towards free trade and tariffs, and 120 countries were involved in these huge complex negotiations, and Ireland was a bit of a big winner. So we've benefited a lot from these trade deals in the past. But he's also talking about, you know, Trump. I love his phrasing. He says his trade deals are a mixture of reality spin and fudge.
Yeah.
And of course, although we just said
that's a good analysis.
It's a good analysis. Yeah. The pharma and semiconductor industries have to wait a bit. But I suppose he's quite upbeat and he's saying, look, the growth will continue, just not as fast as it might have done. And that's not a bad thing.
Yeah. And he's also pointing out that what we have will take a long time to unravel because it's embedded.
Yeah.
And it's not going to happen quickly. One thing I did notice from the piece was that he says that tariffs are only one of Trump's policy options. Yeah. Mm. On Thursday, he issued a letter to 17 of the big pharma companies demanding that they cut prices in the US to the lowest level applying elsewhere. Like, that seems to go completely in the face of a tariff. So yeah. We're increasing your costs and we want to reduce
prices. And we want to reduce your prices. So yeah. We don't want you to make any money and we don't want you to employ more people. And, you know, it has
bizarre.
I think there's a bit of cleverness there because I once negotiated a salary where I pointed to the previous man that was in the position and said, I'm happy to sign this contract so long as he's not paid a cent more than me. And suddenly I got an increase in my salary. So what he's saying is, if you give it to another country for less, we want the same deal, you know,
which
seems fair enough.
I think he also makes the point, Bobby, that maybe we should industry just wait it out. You know, there is the point that, you know, Trump is not going to be there forever.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe it might postpone some of the investment that companies have to make elsewhere other than the US, but maybe not put it off forever.
Yeah, and I think that's when you say that it's a long play.
Yeah.
Trump isn't going to be there forever. No. And, you know, if you've got an industry here, a pharma industry, mm-hmm. employing a lot of people in Ireland, you know, how long does it take to relocate to the States?
There's a lot of sunk investment,
yeah.
a lot of, you know, community involvement.
Absolutely.
And so on.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I guess what it signals is a lower investment, as they're indicating in all the newspapers, in the pharma industry, which is, it has been a huge giant for Ireland. And I think reading that Cantillon piece, the opinion piece, what really struck home with me is how anxious and nervous people in Westport and Kinsale might be waiting for the outcome of the pharmaceutical report, you know, because
yeah.
it has a huge impact on some of the smaller communities in Ireland where they literally, the lifeblood of the town is the fact that they've got employees in the pharma industry and they've got that money going into the local economy.
Yeah, no, it's interesting as well that, like, it's 70%, 75% of our exports to the US are actually pharma. So, the rest is... It's small.
It's small, and we're resilient.
Well, not small, but it's
in the context of
pharma is huge relative to everything else.
Yeah. And we're resilient. Irish industry is resilient. Irish people are resilient. I think we will figure out a way through this. But more certainty would certainly be helpful.
Okay. Aer Lingus numbers are out. The CEO, Lynn Embleton, maybe taking a couple of pot shots at Dublin Airport. Not happy with the planning and the latest cap that they're enduring, but their numbers are pretty stellar, Declan.
The numbers are great. The first half operating profit for 2025 stands at 80 million, which compares to 9 million for the first half of last year. Now, last year was impacted by the pilot strike, so there is some impact on that. But they are saying that underlying their performance has been very, very good this year with that 71 million increase in operating profit. What Lynn is saying is that she is considering legal options in order to remove that limit on nighttime flights at Dublin Airport. She says she hasn't talked to the government, so surprisingly, maybe she won't talk to them if she's going to go down the legal route.
Talk to the lawyers first.
First of all. but they are having a good year. Also, their performance is helped by the delivery of its third A321 XLR aircraft, which are more efficient, carry more passengers. So, you know, they're having a good time at the moment, and they're making the company more efficient as well.
Plus more routes to the States. We already have Nashville and Indianapolis, but she's been sort of coy about what the new routes are.
Yeah, and she should probably reconsider, because nobody's going to the States at the moment. We're all afraid Homeland Security is going to pull us in and search our Instagram and our TikTok to see if they can find evidence of Trump criticism. But the only thing I'd say is this debate continues to be played out by Aer Lingus, and you're hard to feel sorry for them with three times higher operating profit at 80 million for the first half of the year that compared to last year. So they're then on commission, Planol. I talk about Fox and Hunter. I don't know who is who in this one. They're the ones that restricted the nighttime flights between 11 and 7 p.m. So it effectively means less than 98 flights per night. And so they're pushing and pushing and pushing for the cap to be raised. But I'm flying on Aer Lingus at least three times a week, and we get the tiniest planes on the planet. There's no evidence to me that they're increasing capacity through the size of the plane. I don't know that we're all scrambling to try and get flights that we can't get. So I think somebody other than those two the government should intervene and have a proper high-level talk about, is it an issue about noise? She says noise quota is a more appropriate thing than passenger quota. I don't even know what noise quota is, but, yeah. You know, they should really talk it out and stop fighting about
well,
it.
Well, maybe if you live beside the North Runway, you might.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it goes over my house and I don't particularly want more at night time. I don't want to get up earlier either for a 3 a.m. flight.
Let's have a look at Apple now. Interestingly, Declan, yeah. Sales surging, but there seems to be some comment that this seems to be front-loaded on the back of tariffs.
On the back of the tariffs,
and
again.
And that, because the investors really need convincing.
They do, and first line in the story is, what does Apple have to do to impress the analysts? So, yeah, sales are up, as you say, revenue's up by 10%, but they think that because of the tariffs, people have been front-loading their purchases of the iPhone. They also launched the budget 16E model, Bobby, which has done very well for them. It's given people an entry level. It has a lot of the features of the more expensive phones, so they've really done a good job of that. But the market is not responding. And so far this year, the stock has underperformed all its Magnificent Seven peers, as they're called, except, of course, Trump's friend, Tesla, as
yeah.
well. So, the other issue is around AI. The analysts are sort of saying, and the industry is sort of saying, that they're not really embracing AI as quickly as their competitors, and therefore they're losing out to maybe Samsung and Google and so on.
Yeah, interesting, Nora. As Declan says, they say that the tariffs will cost them €1 billion. Yeah. Them being very, very slow on AI. Share price down 17%, while Microsoft is up 25% for the same period.
Huge amount. That's because most of their parts come from China and India, and we already know India is facing 25% tariffs, so there's quite a lot coming from...
But this is the tariff now coming home to roost.
Yes.
Where we can see it here in the end game.
I think absolutely it's a tariff bump, because if I was anybody sitting in Ireland right now who exports to the US, I'd be sending the lorries by the triple load, because anything that happens before August 7th is subject to the 10%. So no doubt people said, I'm buying it now because...
Well, we also saw that with our exports the last quarter.
Yeah, exactly.
That we're completely buoyed by what was coming down the track and get to the stock tariff-free or with a lower tariff before.
And I shouldn't have said that because, you know, all the roads will be clogged now with lorries for next week.
12 years on, Declan, Sean Dunn's US bankruptcy yielding just 7.5 million. This is a sag, as I say. 12 years seems like an awful long time. It seems like it is a few years to run in the Irish court system.
Yeah, for sure. It's a staggering fall, I suppose, really, in terms of the amount of money that's involved, if you like. And Ulster Bank, for example, will only they claimed $428 million and will just get $6 million.
Yeah.
NAMA, of course, which is one of the other big losers here as well, it will only get $6 million, €5.2 million. From their claim, which was $438 million. So staggering.
Who's getting the rest of the money?
Well, the rest of the money is going to his two ex-wives, some of it anyway. There is $800,000 going to his second wife, Gail Killalay, and to his first wife, Jennifer Coyle, she's getting around $900,000.
I see that the property on, is it Shrewsbury or Aylesbury Road, Walford, he bought it for $58 million, and NAMA only got $14 million.
$14 million first.
It's amazing.
In 2013, maybe they should have held out for a little while. I wonder what it's worth today.
So the really interesting thing about this story, one winner, and it's certainly not the creditors, his assets. Sorry, did you read that? Golf clubs.
Yeah.
Skis, a watch, a wedding band, very telling.
But how are they?
Cufflinks.
No, but like, if we're talking...
10-year tickets to the Aviva Stadium for rugby and some for Twickenham. That's all listed under his assets.
Yeah, but we're talking about millions of euros and dollars here. Mm. And then they're specifically highlighting golf clubs and skiing here.
It's crazy.
Like, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. I think with the figures you read out, Declan, you know, when you think about that, you think, you know, was this the cleverest strategy? Is this a message to everybody? Go off to the States and delay, 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 delay. Because at the end, he'll only end up paying $27.5 million. Half of that has already gone out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And well, at least it seems to be coming to an end in the States. We still have a few years to go by the looks of it.
Yeah, it's I mean, as you say, maybe a delay, but the quality of your life at that
point. Oh, stop.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I wanted to look at Airbnb. There's three articles in today's Independent. Firstly, looking a good, very good piece of research around this weekend. They surveyed 34,000 properties, the cheapest to the dearest, from 2,500 down to 177 euros if you want to go to Carlo this weekend. But it is a good piece of work in that it gives a sort of a price spread across the country of what's available and how much. What did you take from it, Declan?
I think you can spend what you want to spend, or yeah, spend what you don't want to spend. Actually, the highest one, Bobby, which I think would probably suit you, was in North Wexford. There was a 9-bed villa that cost 4,050 euros.
Way too dear for me.
3 nights. So, and I think that was the dearest. Being a Northsider, I was pleased to see that Northside of Dublin was up there in terms of the price and the attractiveness of it all. The other thing that caught my eye in here was that apparently we only really visit 7 counties, really.
This is what you're considered the sort of Airbnb strongholds.
The strongholds.
Galway, yeah. Dingle.
Yeah.
Kinsale.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What it reignited, I think, is the whole debate about short-term lets and, you know, the Irish self-catering industries, you know, kicking back at the government and saying, you know, it's not our fault about the housing crisis. And, of course, the government has put a cap or said that it's going to restrict planning for communities which were 10,000 or less population. That really struck home with me, because the two that will be impacted by that is Ballina and Tramore. So you have to see that these short-term lets, especially in small towns that don't have a hotel anymore for other reasons, they're reliant, the entire local economy is reliant on people coming in as tourists and being able to stay somewhere. And, you know, you think of the shops, the restaurants, the whole infrastructure in the area being boosted. I think it's the wrong approach until we sort of the hotels.
Well, I think as one commenter in the piece says, you can't compare Ballina and Barcelona.
Yeah, exactly.
In terms of of what the needs are.
Yeah.
They're very different.
Like, the reality is, a lot of small towns in Ireland have been hit by the fact that their hotels aren't available to them. And the only way that tourists can come is really to rent local accommodation.
Yeah. Also, it's only a fraction of the overall accommodation. Like, it's...
Yeah, it's tiny.
It's 3 or 4% max.
Yeah, very, very small.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very interesting. But they also, I don't know if you read the third piece about from spiders to working dairy farms. One Airbnb-er, a host, bans fake tan. Another says don't let the sheep in if you don't close the gate. And there's one in Limerick, Declan, I know you like this. They charge extra for ESB. How about that?
Very good.
So you pay your rate and then the ESB is extra. There you go. Devil's in the detail, Nora.
Devil's in the detail.
Now, what about the weekend we're in? It's a bank holiday weekend. And we're all out and about. What about the history of our weekends, our bank holiday weekends, Nora? We've got 10 public holidays. The EU average is 12, so we're punching a bit below our weight there. But we got St. Bridget's Day in 2022, which is another bonus.
Yeah, I like to stay up on the mountain on this one, because the August bank holiday is a very special one. I just remember it hugely from when I was a kid. And of course, there's loads of festivals and loads of things on. And I think Breda goes back to the origins in 1924, when the leader of the Irish Labour Party, Thomas Johnson's, told that all a man is easier in his mind when he's getting a holiday if he's getting his pay for the same day.
Which is a lovely way of putting it.
It's a nice way of putting it, that it's like a free holiday. And
Don't worry about work, you're getting paid anyway. We're paying you to go on holidays.
August reminds me of Sunday nights. Like, it's a legacy of school that I get anxious on Sunday nights and I worry about Monday morning. And, you know, I probably go to bed early and I'm goody two shoes on Monday evening. I feel that way about August. It's like the last month before we hit the back to school, big organisational routine of September. So the bank holiday kind of kickstarts that feel-good factor of those lovely days of August that we shouldn't actually, you know, throw away. We should embrace every second of it.
I have to say, this is my favourite bank holiday weekend of the year.
Yeah.
I'll be heading to Kilkee, to West Clare, not long after this show. And I go
you,
at this
in
time.
In fairness, you have the shirt on, Bobby. I hope somebody, you know, looks in at the camera because he's got the Hawaiian shirt.
At Junction 14, somebody will probably say, that's a nice shirt
nice
you're
shirt,
wearing, Bobby.
Yeah.
Declan, some weather warnings, though, this weekend. So, again, I think it'll be fine up till Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening. But things are going to change. Monday is looking pretty miserable.
It's looking
if you're
like
at all together now or some of those out and about places.
My recommendation for Monday is take to the bed, Bobby. Make it a duvet day. Bank holiday duvet day.
Yeah.
I'm flying on Monday with or without the cap, which is not the Danny Healy Ray cap, by the way. It's more I'm worried about the wind because I'm a bit of a nervous flyer at the best of times and that will slightly freak me out. But let's hope for calm.
I think you might be needing to put a few extra pegs into the ground sheet in the tent on the basis of the wind that will be coming in on Sunday night, Monday morning. But finally, maybe just don't do it yourself. A third of people who take on DIY jobs in the home never finish them. Yeah, I could be one of those.
It's a case of DIY, as you say, don't do it yourself. The only thing that doesn't surprise me, I suppose, about this is, and we have to take it with a grain of salt, this is a survey that was organised by Ding, who are a UK home repairs service.
So they're
selling
there's
their
wares. There's a PR slant
to this.
There's
a slant here. Yeah. We'll do it for you. Don't do it yourself.
Yeah.
Fueled by shows like Room to Improve and DIY SOS, everybody's taken to YouTube, I think, is the best accompaniment you can have to a DIY job and watch all those videos. I am quite good at fixing and finishing. But my late husband, sadly, was terrible at it. But he knew he was terrible at it. There's nothing worse than somebody thinks they're good at it. And, you know, if they say, I can't do it, just get a man or a woman in to do it.
Well, the great enemy here is YouTube. Because they're now these how-to videos make the DIY amateur feel that he or she is now infallible.
Invincible.
Totally invincible.
I'm midway through fixing my tiles at the moment. And I would never have tackled that without YouTube.
The last time I talked to my builder, he says, Bobby, I told you before, you should never attempt those kind of jobs yourself. There you go.
Wise advice.
Yeah, you heard it here, folks. To Nora Casey, indeed, broadcaster, businesswoman, Declan Ralph from BWG. Thank you for a great weekend and enjoy the weekend and be safe out there on Monday.
You too.
Thanks, Bobby.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.